Before I begin my message tonight, I'd like to mention the Rocky Mountain Christian newspaper, you know, that's on the back table back there. When we got the latest issue, you know, it comes like this. And then I opened it up and said, oh, I know who that couple is. This is the man who performed Carrie and I's ceremony. And also, he's really the man who I would say was as much as anyone else responsible for just getting me off the ground as a Christian. There were others who taught me ahead of time before I was converted. And he was part of that process. And the preacher there, Paul Rogers, was preaching powerful sermons that did a lot to persuade me to become a Christian. But then after I became a Christian, several of the members did some teaching. But Bruce Bennett, in particular, just taught me and instructed me and encouraged me and supported me. And usually whenever we've gone back to Longmont, Colorado to visit the brethren there, or family too, we always see him. So I was quite surprised to see him right on the front page of the newspaper. I just wanted to point that out to you. To reach the lost, we have to be able to understand the lost. How can I help someone if I do not understand that person? How can I rescue someone if I don't fully understand how they got themselves into that situation? How can I rescue someone if they don't know they need rescuing? And if they think they're perfectly fine where they are? So to reach the lost, we just have to understand them. We have to put ourselves in their shoes. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give four lessons with 6 points each on what we can call lostology, studying the lost. And I read a book, which I have up on the screen right now, Out of Their Faces and Into Their Shoes, and it just talks about 24 laws of lostology. So I'm going to be presenting those to you as well as things from my own experience in how to just reach people who are outside of Christ. People who have the secular mind. This is primarily what we're looking at. Not so much maybe the person who's in religious error, but just the person who just isn't even in any religion at all, but is a secular person, which is where I was. I was not converted out of any religious error because I didn't have any religious upbringing at all. Had no religious teaching. I shouldn't say no, but very little. I was a secular person. I was a worldly person. And we need to understand how to deal with those people. But when we talk about evangelism, we're talking about something that both Christians and non-Christians don't like. It's something that makes us uncomfortable. And maybe what we need to do is we need to try empathy. Instead of looking at it as a confrontation, maybe we need to look at it as something like how Jesus did, where he was in people's shoes with them. And that way it becomes natural rather than a planned speech, to where we have a conversation with someone and not a high-pressure sales pitch. I don't like when people give me a high-pressure sales pitch, and I don't like to give them one either. And yet, when you look at Jesus in the apostles, or even in the Gospels, and the apostles in the book of Acts, you don't necessarily see a high-pressure sales pitch. But with Jesus especially, you see him involved in conversations with people that seem to just be natural for him and for the people with whom he spoke. So we want to be able to get out of a situation where we find that it's hard to talk. We just sometimes have a hard time talking with someone. So what we know what people need, but we often forget how they think and how they feel. Most of us have been in Christianity so long that we forget how we thought back then. How we felt. And it's important to explore that again so that we can understand, again, how people are and what we can do to reach them. And, of course, Jesus is always our primary example. We can look at Luke chapter 19. And I like the way he dealt with a man by the name of Zacchaeus. You remember him? He was the man who was so short he couldn't see over the crowd, so he ran ahead where he figured Jesus would be walking, climbed up into a tree so he could just get a glimpse of the Son of God walking by. And of course, Jesus was very impressed with that, and he stopped and told the man to come down from the tree, and they had a brief conversation. And Jesus told the man that he was going to go to his house today and visit him. But he also said this in verses 9 and 10. Today salvation has come to this house because he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save that which was lost. By identifying Zacchaeus and really all of us as lost, Jesus implied, I would say, at least two things. That we're not where we're supposed to be. Doesn't that mean, isn't that what it means when you're lost? You're supposed to be here, but you're way over there someplace. You're not where you're supposed to be. But secondly, he also implied that he values us. He values our friendship. He values our fellowship. I don't want you to be lost. I want you here with me. And I think Jesus got that message across to people with both his words and just the way he dealt with them. He illustrated that with three parables in Luke chapter 15. One of which Caleb already read for us. In the first parable, Jesus spoke about a shepherd who lost one sheep out of his 100. He went to go find that lost sheep. And then when he found him, the Bible says, Jesus said, that he called his friends together and celebrated with them. In the parable that Caleb read in verses 8 through 10, there Jesus spoke about a woman who lost one coin out of 10. And she looked all over the house for that coin, which we believe had to do with like our wedding rings. You know, it indicated that she was married and she's lost part of this, and that was a serious thing to her. So she looked and she looked, and then Jesus said when she found it, she did the same thing as the shepherd. She called together her friends and neighbors and celebrated that she found the lost coin. In the third parable that begins in verse 11 and goes all the way to the end of the chapter, it's the longest parable of the three. But this time a man has lost one of two sons. And the son goes off and lives a life that he thought he always wanted to live. And finally, when he realized that that was not the right life and that it led to bad things, he came back home. And when he came home, his dad threw a party. In all three situations, Jesus is showing, I think, how both he and his father respond to someone who is lost. There's celebration. In fact, in the first two examples, he even said that even as there was celebration among the shepherd and his friends, and then the woman and her friends, there's celebration in heaven. The angels rejoice. When a person who was lost is now saved. Have you ever wondered why people called Jesus a friend of tax collectors and sinners? In fact, in Matthew chapter 11 and verse 19, it is Jesus himself who revealed that he knew that's what he was called. He knew that people were calling him a friend of tax collectors and sinners. Why did people call him that? Well, God, as Jesus, lived among the lost, and the lost loved him for it. He was not as the Pharisees, who never connected with the world because they separated themselves from the world. In fact, that's what the word Pharisee means, separated. We don't want anything to do with those worldly people. We don't want anything to do with those secular people. And so they never made the connection. They never gained a